Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 23 of the Football Absurdity Podcast. It's week 13 of the NFL. My name is Jeff Crisco, and I'm here as always with my co-host, Mike Valverde. Mike, how are you doing today after I fumble your last name?
I'm doing great. You know, I think I'm doing a heck of a lot better than Kareem Hunt or those officials from last night.
So, man, those officials from last night deserve to have as much of a job in the NFL as Kareem Hunt. I think they were. That was some questionable stuff, but the Kareem Hunt stuff is even more questionable. Breaking news, if you get your breaking news from a podcast, literally minutes before we started recording, Kareem Hunt was, he got cut by the Chiefs today. Not really a laughing matter, some pretty heinous video, but if you're listening to this, you already know all about it, so we won't really talk about the Kareem Hunt thing. But what do you think about Spencer Ware?
You know, he's a good player. No, he sucks. I mean, I don't really have a lot of hope for Spencer Ware to do anything. Good offense, though. So
yeah, good offense. I mean, he's all right. I remember going into draft season last year, it was, you know, Spencer Ware was like fourth round pick, something like that, before he got hurt. So, I mean, he's all right. I think he'll do okay. He's not going to be Kareem Hunt. But I think he'll be like an RB2 going forward, like 18 something. Like you said, the offense is spectacular. So I think he'll do okay.
Yeah. You know, I could see him, verge flex, top flex option, verge bottom running back two option, somewhere in there. He definitely should make your lineup every week in one of those two spots. But yeah, as you said, I don't expect a whole lot other than that.
There's been a lot of new popping up over the last couple weeks. You got Eckler, Hunt, Edwards, Josh Adams. Am I missing anybody?
You said Edwards. Not that I can think of offhand. I'm sure there's like one or two guys in there, but it's crazy. It's just all these running backs are now just emerging. And
yeah. LeGarrette Blount's getting his 35th shot at being a starter because Kerryon Johnson's hurt.
Yeah.
that's what it was. That's who I was thinking of. It's just all these new running backs. And that's why, you know, I mean, I draft like six running backs, even though I only start two, because there's all these guys that pop up along the way. So I do that. So you mentioned it, Thursday Night Football. Did you get a chance to watch it?
Yes, I did.
I'm sorry. I tuned in expecting this big old shootout, and it was a good game, but it wasn't much for fantasy purposes unless. And I think the Saints DST, I don't play in a lot of DST leagues, but I think the Saints DST got a lot of sacks. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, they hit them pretty good. You know, there was a lot of mental errors, I thought, in that game. Randy Gregory, I don't know how he still has a job. Oh.
Yeah, Randy Gregory, that, when he lost, like, that was. I mean, if the Saints lost, that would have been the play that – I mean, if the Saints won, that would have been the play that did it. That would have done Dallas in, because that was just a monstrously terrible play. Like, come on, man. Like, to line up off sides like that on such an important down and to not even get much of an advantage of it, I don't know.
Well, yeah, and don't forget about the running into the kicker before that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, Randy Gregory, too?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even realize that. I thought it was just some random scrub special teamer. I was in and out because I was writing. I was just kind of trying not to pay too much attention to it because in my main league, I had Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara. So I was kind of doing you know when you watch a scary movie and it's, like, at a really bad part and you kind of, like,
do the side eyeball thing.
Yeah, side eyeball. You're watching the space next to the TV, but you're still taking it in. That's kind of how I was with that game because I was just like, ooh, that's bad. Like, ooh, I don't like that.
Yeah, especially when you got Breeze and Kamara going at the same time. That's painful.
Yeah. I mean, silver lining, the guy I was going up against has Ingram. So, you know, I had two bad guys go. He has one bad guy go. And, unsilver lining, his quarterback is Pat Mahomes, so that's going to be a a lot of playoffs in that league, so it's okay. So,
well, yeah, especially when facing the Raiders.
Oh, I know. It's going to be, I was up until today, I was in my brain this morning, I was thinking, it's like, okay, how can I hype this? All right. They're going to, Sammy Watkins is out. They're going to just go run it with Kareem Hunt. There we go. That's how I'll get around Patrick Mahomes throwing 5 touchdowns this week. And then, nope, Spencer Ware. So maybe they'll bench Patrick Mahomes for some reason for rest. I don't know. Yeah. Oh, boy. Anyways, that game was interesting because the Cowboys kind of showed us the blueprint to beat the Saints, but because they had almost a 2-1 time of possession. I think the Saints only had the ball for 23 minutes to the Cowboys 37. So they kind of gave us a blueprint, but at the same time, it really felt like the Saints kind of beat themselves a lot. There was a lot of like Michael Thomas drops, and there was an Alvin Kamara drop on like third down where it was like at the first down marker and it just bounced off his hand. And it wasn't like he was even closely guarded. It felt kind of like the Cowboys made the blueprint, but the Saints just like shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, they did have a couple situations where they could have done, like if they were able to exploit it, they would have been able to move the ball better than they did. Not only did they shoot themselves in the foot, but in those kind of situations, but they had two calls that they didn't get right for replay. So that wiped out all of their replays. And in the fourth quarter, I don't know if you saw this, but in the fourth quarter, about 8 minutes left or so, who was it? Was it Elliott? But I don't know. I can't remember who it was. But they were running for a first down. It was like third down and 8. And his knee hit. You could plainly see his knee touching the ground after being touched. So he was down. And then he jumps forward and gets the first down. Well,
and they give it to him, and he can't.
They give him the first down, and it was obvious that if they had a replay, they would have been able to overturn that. But just things like that, like you're saying, shooting the cells in the foot.
Yeah, I was actually thinking last night because Sean Payton burned both of his challenges in the first quarter. And if you don't know the rule, I'm not saying this to you, Mike. I'm saying to people listening. If you don't know the rule, you get 2 challenges, and if they're both right, you get a third, which is absurd because that means to get a third challenge, you have to see the ref screw up twice. And if what happens if you get all 3 right and then the ref screw up a fourth time? I think you should get 2 challenges, okay? And if you get it right, you don't burn the challenge.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
so you absolutely. can get 2 wrong. You can get as many right because I don't, and they have it in baseball too. This like. It's part of the game. Human error is part of the game. A strike zone that is shaped like, you know, an hourglass. Oh, that's part of the game. I don't like that. I want chips in the football. Like, it's absurd. This has a lot to do with fantasy football, right? But this is absurd that this is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and the way that they figure out where the football ended up is part-time. Let's be clear here, part-time, like mostly old guys, like it's mostly guys in their 60s or, you know, late 50s, where they think the ball ended up. And then they measure it with the chain. And then if the chain, the football is a millimeter further than the chain, then you get a first down. And then they use like pieces of paper. It's a $1 billion industry. Put a chip in the football. just chip the football. Like, it's not that hard. On my phone, I can see what a bed looks like from Amazon. I can pull up my camera and see what it looks like in my living room. But the NFL can't. Just put some chips in the football. And I mean, they already have the chips because they have them in the player pads. Put them in the football, and there you go. If not for first downs, for touchdowns. It's so easy. It's so easy to see if you cross the plane if you have a chip in the ball. Like, come on. You put chips in the pylons, chips in the ball, chips around the ball. If that chip breaks the line created by the pylons, well, guess what? It's a touchdown. There, I just saved football.
I like it. Plus, you're making me hungry for chips, so hey, man. I might go out for Mexican food tonight.
Oh, that sounds nice. But I will not be going out tonight because I have to pump out more content for you, the listener, the reader. I got to get that done. But But all right, so that was Thursday Night Football. I mean, I think it was kind of a blip for the Saints. I mean, I'm sure you agree. You know, they had their fewest amount of, I think it was yards since 2001. So I think we can call that a blip. And for the Cowboys, I mean, Dak's been coming on. I think he might be a late season option for you. I think his ownership's getting a little high. Let me double check that. Let's see what Dak Prescott's ownership is. Dak Prescott is 56% owned, so he might be in all lower leagues.
I think. Yeah, you know what's interesting too about that was that in the beginning of the year, I pretty much grilled you on both Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper, and they both started out pretty crappy. And I'm like, and I'm gloating. I'm like, yeah, I know my stuff. Yeah. And now look what's happening.
Yeah, and what's funny is in so many of my leagues, my takes were so wrong to start with, and now they're like rounding into shape. But the problem is all my teams, they like lost 4 out of their first 6 and then 1-4 out of their second 6. So it's like, oh, I'm 6-6. Great. It like so many takes, like Dak Prescott, like Amari, like Alshon Jeffrey being bad. Like he was good, he was hurt, then he was really good, and now he's with Golden Tate, he's bad again. And I'm like, I just want my takes to be correct all year long. That's all I want. I'm very proud of my, let's see, LeSean McCoy take, my Drew Brees take. I think we talked about Drew Brees pretty much every preview episode where I was like, just go get Drew Brees. Just go get Drew Brees.
Yeah.
What I should go back. This is what we're going to do. We're going to go back. We're going to edit in. I'm going to say, go get Pat Mahomes. Go get Pat Mahomes. And then I'll look like a genius. Does that sound good? I think that's what
I like that.
I think that's what we'll do at the end of the season. We'll just go back and we'll just edit the takes and be like, you know who I think? I think what'll happen is Le'Veon Bell will sit out all year. Don't draft Le'Veon Bell. Take James Conner. You know, and just make sure we have absolutely correct takes. We'll go back and we'll edit those in.
You know, I think you're onto something there.
All right. I'm on something, that's for sure. So all right, that's Thursday Night Football. So if you never listened before, what we do, we normally don't jibber jabber that much. but what we do is we take a look at Thursday Night Football. We each name a sleeper at each position. And then we take a look ahead at the games that week. It's our first full week since week 4 was the first bye week. Everybody's back. Yeah, so there's no more buys. So and then we take a look ahead. What's that?
Bye-bye to the buys.
Bye-bye to the buys. Ain't no lie. Bye-bye, buys. Bye-bye. And then we take a look ahead at the games. But instead of saying, you know, you should start this player, you should sit that player, what we do is we take a look at, or let you know what we're taking a look at, some actionable information. We do give you some, hey, you know, this guy might be a good start. This guy might stay away from this guy. But mostly what we're doing, tools, we're teaching you how to fish, we're giving you, separating the wheat from the chaff, letting you know, hey, you know, does it matter all the targets that Trey Quinn has gotten over the last couple weeks? I mean, does it? It might, who knows? That might be a preview of the last of what I'm looking for in the last game. Big question mark. But what we generally do is Mike is a Colts fan, I am a 49ers fan, so he takes the AFC home games, I take the NFC home games. So you'll hear some back and forth, but we'll both talk about everybody. First game on the docket. It is the Baltimore Ravens travel to Atlanta to take on the Falcons. It is a 49.5 point over-under, and Baltimore is favored by 1.5 in this one. On this one, what I'm looking for is everything that's changed. We missed last week because of Thanksgiving, but the Ravens, since the last time we talked, Gus Edwards is their running back now, and he's amazing. And Lamar Jackson is also a running back, but sometimes he throws the football, and he's been amazing for fantasy. So it's one of those things where you're just sort of trying to figure out you know, what's going on there, because if Gus Edwards gets his third straight 100-yard game, then you might not be able to pull him out of your lineup. I mean, if you have Kareem Hunt and Gus Edwards, you might not really miss much now that Kareem Hunt is gone. But in PPR leagues, he's never, it looks like he's never going to catch a pass. I don't think he has any catches in his first two games. I think he has one target. So basically what I'm looking for is, can they continue to roll? They being Gus Edwards and Lamar Jackson. And is it going to be the same formula where the wide receivers are kind of mostly ignored? You know, with Joe Flacco, we got spoiled because they threw it so much. But at this point, it's pretty much the Lamar Jackson and the running backs show there in Baltimore.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how much of a quarterback Jackson can become, because I really don't see much out of this guy. He's just doesn't look good as a quarterback, and but as long as he's running with the ball, you know, there's going to be points had.
Oh yeah, we all saw it in the preseason because everybody was hyped to see what Lamar Jackson could do, but it's more of the same in the regular season. He's not very polished as a passer in the NFL yet. It's weird to say it because he runs all over everybody, but it seems a little fast and big for him when he's behind the line of scrimmage. Not great accuracy, not great decision making. I think maybe a little frantic, because you have this thing where he's kind of playing for John Harbaugh's job. Like, so he might have a lot on his shoulders, but that has nothing to do with fantasy. On the Atlanta side, is what it is. Ito Smith had a nice few games, but he's, you know, toasted. And Tevin Coleman has probably the worst matchup he'll have all year. So probably don't want to start him if you can get away with it. But if you can't skip starting him, then so be it. And Matty Ice is pretty, pretty darn good. Anything you want to add to the Falcons? It's a battle of the birds.
Yeah, actually it is. You're right. I'm still interested in seeing how Calvin Ridley's going to do. Hopefully he can continue to be a standout. And then, yeah, I don't know about Ito Smith, if he's sort of fallen off or not. But, yeah, those guys are the ones I'm sort of keeping an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, Ito Smith, I think, and maybe fallen off wasn't the right phrasing that I should have used. I think it was, he hasn't built on what we saw earlier in the year. You know, he's just kind of,
yeah, exactly.
Just a guy. I mean, he had 7 yards last week, and he has, let's see, over the last 3 weeks, he's on a season long pace. You ready? So over the last three games, paraded over 16 games. 112 rushing yards on the season. Yeah, so he's only gotten, this is what gets me, is he's only gotten like 5 carries a game over the last few games and like 3 targets. So he's really fallen to the very short side of that platoon. So, but he had the 3 games there where he was kind of, or you know, he scored touchdowns in 3 straight, and then he had some rushes, some targets, and then he scored again. So you kind of had to, you could like squint and be like, okay, well, I can see what Ito Smith is. He's kind of like this like touchdown or bust, like desperation flex guy. And now he's just over the last 3, he's just fallen apart. And now he gets the second best run defense in the NFL. So don't expect much from Ito this week. Ito, yeah. More like E. No, am I right? All right, next game up is Bears Giants. This one's in New York, and the Bears are 3.5-point favorites. A team starting Chase Daniel in 2018. A team starting Chase Daniel, period, is a favorite. So that tells you all you need to know about the New York Giants. I don't think there's much there worth talking about. Evan Ingram's banged up. I don't know if he's going to play. That's up in the air. Saquon, Odell's Odell, Eli's Eli. Not to say that Eli is anywhere near Saquon and Odell, but you know what you're getting. Against the Bears defense, I would not trust, just because I don't trust Eli to get the ball to him, because the Giants offensive line is kind of poopy, and the Bears have one of the best pass rushes. I would not trust Sterling Shepard this week. And like I said, Evan Ingram's banged up. But in this one, what I'm really looking for is Taylor Gabriel. Down here, but he's had at least 5 targets in 4 of his last 5 games. He has 17 targets in his last two games. And what's funny is in Atlanta, and the way that we kind of profiled him going into Chicago is Taylor Gabriel was a speedster. He was a deep threat. He was a D-Jax, Marquise Goodwin kind of player. But he hasn't in the last five games where he's gotten at least five targets, he hasn't passed 72 yards in any of them. Or I'm sorry, 52 yards in any of them. So he's had all these catches. He's had tons of catches, but they've all been sort of short passes, around the first down marker and all that stuff. So pretty different usage tree or usage profile for Gabriel. And, you know, is he going to become a PPR darling for you down the stretch? That's kind of what I'm looking for. And we said it multiple times, but is Jordan Howard? I think now it's like Jordan Howard died and then got reanimated. It's like, is Jordan Howard dead again? Who knows? This one is a see if he's worth holding on to for your roster. And I pooed Waleed earlier this year for saying that the Bears might move on from Jordan Howard, but they've kind of ceremonially moved on from Jordan Howard last week. They only gave him seven carries with Chase Daniel under center. So you'd think he'd be getting more touches than that. But he's only passed, goodness gracious, he's only passed more than 3.25 yards per carry in a game twice this season. So that tells you all you need to know about his production, because that man does not catch passes. Not looking great for the guy I convinced you would be a top 10 running back at the end of the year, huh?
Yeah, well, I was there with you. I was a big Jordan Howard truther. I even swung it out with Waleed to be the one that be Howard's promoter. So
that's true. I felt like I kind of Pied Piper'd you into that. So I'm glad that you don't agree with me on that front. So. So next one up is another New York team, which I have a question. Would you rather see a bear fight a giant or a buffalo fight a dolphin?
I'd rather see a buffalo fight a dolphin, because one's land and one's sea.
All right. What about a guy named Bill fighting a dolphin?
I think anybody named Bill should fight a dolphin.
All right, that goes out to all you Bills out there. Go fight a dolphin. Tell them Football Absurdity sent you. Actually, please do. That would be some pretty nice advertisement. Tell them Football Absurdity told you to punch the dolphin in the nose. Anyways, Buffalo travels to Miami, AFC East matchup. This one's got a 40-point over-under, so not great for football or for fantasy football. In fact, it is the worst, which makes sense because the Bills and the Dolphins are two of the worst teams in the league. Maybe not two of the worst, two of the most, I don't know the best way to put it, most potential to absolutely crater and fall apart in any given game.
Yeah, and if you're as we are speaking of fantasy, probably one of the two worst teams in fantasy football purposes, for sure. I mean,
absolutely. There's no, I mean, Kenyon Drake out of both these teams is the closest to a slam dunk starter, and even then he's like a middling running back too, like on a week to week basis. the Dolphins, believe it or not, are the favorites in this one, 3.5-point favorites because they're the home team. That makes it pretty much a toss-up. That's the standard issue, like home team gets 3 points sort of deal in Vegas. What are you looking for in this one?
So the one thing that I want to look for in is to see if any of these offensive players, any of them, can achieve number one numbers for fantasy purposes, or I'm either willing to say, okay, number two. Can any of these guys even get to number two for, you know, and I don't know. I think the best shot is LeSean McCoy. He's getting pretty heavy volume with 20 touches per game over his last six. Miami allows just 17 rushing points to running backs. So that's a pretty high amount. That's, you're looking at 28th. And so those two matchups, I like the volume that McCoy's getting, and the fact that Miami pretty much lays down to the run means that I think LeSean McCoy can either hit number one numbers or number two. And they also allow they're last in the league with 96 scrimmage yards allowed. So McCoy can catch the ball. And I think because of Miami's defense, when it comes down to stopping the run and allowing running backs to catch the ball, they're not very good at stopping. McCoy's my guy there. Miami has a weird combo backfield. I think I talk about this every week, but Kenny Drake is outperforming Frank Gore, yet Al Gore out-touches Drake like every week.
I'm sorry, did you call him Al Gore?
That, what's that?
I think you called him Al Gore.
Al Gore?
It's an inconvenient truth that he's getting
about as much production done as Al Gore is anyways.
Yikes.
And yeah, it's pretty bad. They keep giving him the ball too, which makes zero sense. I mean, we love Al Gore. Okay, I did it again. We love Al Gore. Okay, for now on, he's Al Gore. We love Frank Gore, but you know, he's just not getting it done. But the Miami, I guess, Dolphins love him too, because they'd rather give him the ball than Kenny Drake. So whatever.
So wait, hold on. Frank Gore. He has gotten double digit carries in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games this season. He has more than 5 yards per carry in 4 of them, or 4 yards per carry in 4 of them. He's performed better on a yards per carry than LeSean McCoy has.
Wow.
That's crazy. That's just nonsense.
And you would totally think that would like not even ever be the case, but
exactly. Yeah. But on a game to game, like performance basis, not great, not great, Mr. McCoy, and not great, Mr. Gore. Hasn't scored a touchdown yet either.
Exactly. Exactly. And Drake has, I think, 3 on the ground. It's just weird. It just doesn't make any sense, but whatever, I guess I think they're 5-6. So they're doing something right. And then if you're looking I'd start McCoy. Either as a running back 2, probably, and flex Kenyon Drake. That's it. That's really the only players on either of those teams that I would look at even putting in my lineup.
Yep. All righty. So that one's put to bed. There, say there. Next one up, Denver travels to Cincinnati, who suddenly does not have a quarterback. Like, how bad do you have to be Andy Dalton's backup?
Yeah, right.
Jeff Driscoll is good as your new starting quarterback. This is a 45-point over-under, so a little bit better than the last one, but it's a 5.5-point spread with the Broncos as the obvious favorites here, since they're starting an actual NFL quarterback. What are you looking for for this one?
Mostly what I'm looking for is if Jeff Driscoll can at least play as adequate as Andy Dalton. And I'm the more concerned I am, or not maybe concerned, but the way I want to look at this is, who is Jeff Driscoll going to target? And I think that's probably the most important thing. So we know that Driscoll offers athleticism, but it's 5.3 yards passing attempt per attempt. So he's, every time he throws a ball, he throws it 5.3 yards. So he's like not throwing it like very far at all. It's horrible. But you know, as we all, I don't know if the people out there that don't know Jeff Driscoll, he doesn't have a very strong arm, and I think that's pretty evident with that last week.
Yeah, he's
a noodle armor. Last week, he targeted Auden Tate on 7 targets, but now that AJ Green is back, I can definitely see that changing. You know, one of the guys that I like is, of course, Azuma, and he really got targeted. He got targeted 10 times with Driscoll, and the Broncos are prone to giving up points to the tight end position. So I'm thinking Driscoll coming in not only last week, but being sort of a new quarterback trying to get adjusted to the game, they're going to look to their safety valve, and their tight end running backs are always the check down guy. So they're always ones that, okay, normally what they do, they look at the first read. If AJ Green's not open, then they look to see for the open guy, and just so they can get accustomed to the game and acclimated. So I see that happening a lot. I see Azuma getting quite a bit targets like he did last week.
Not Tyler Boyd. You don't think it, I guess he runs a little bit deeper routes than Azuma, huh?
Yeah. Azuma doesn't run very far, very deep routes at all. I mean, his yards per catch are really poor, even for a tight end. So yeah, it's either probably going to go to Mixon or Azuma. I'm assuming.
Yeah.
For the Broncos, the offensive coordinators have basically abandoned the split between Lindsay and Freeman.
Yeah, I know. Lindsay, it's crazy.
Yeah, Freeman is not getting much of the carries at all anymore. Since Freeman has returned from his injury 2 games ago, Lindsay has out-touched him 29-14. And jeez. Lindsay has been phenomenal running back, perhaps the best rookie, you know, not named Saquon. So, I for an undrafted rookie, definitely has been awesome and very well could be, you know, one of those candidates for rookie of the year if Saquon Barkley was coming out not next year, not this year. So Barkley's kind of dampened his. Yeah, exactly. And the Bengals are 31st in points allowed on the run game. So definitely look for Lindsay to get in the end zone, and 29th in receiving points allowed to the Packers, to running backs. A running back has scored a TD in each game since week one with multiple touchdowns to running backs in 4 of the 6 weeks. So I really think Lindsay's going to get in the end zone. Freeman might, but look for Lindsay's role to even more expand, not only as season is getting closer and closer to the end, but he's also catching more passes. And Devontae Booker, even though he's not going to be used at all and you really shouldn't be putting him in your lineups unless you absolutely have to, Lindsay's even catching the ball more now. So he's becoming the number one back, the sole back in Denver's offense.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that. So I guess it's time to cut all your running backs not named Philip Lindsay. I know I had Devonta Booker sitting at the end of a couple benches in some deeper leagues just in case, but he hasn't been great. He's been the number three there in Denver. So no more Freemans, no more Bookers. Looks like it's just Philip Lindsay.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Denver. I still think Freeman is going to have somewhat of a role, but it's definitely being reduced.
Yeah. I mean, but in terms of fantasy, like, do we really want to have any of those guys? And I don't think we do. Question for you in Denver. So Courtland Sutton, he has not quite broken out like we thought he would. Do you think you're still hanging on to him, or do you think you're going to try to find somebody else to stash on your bench for the playoff run?
I think it depends on who's out there right now. You know, we're getting down to pretty much the nitty gritty of who's available and who's actually going to do good. So he's a starter. Courtland Sutton's a starter. So, and I would definitely keep on to him unless someone just really emerges that you like. Other than that, what you're getting from Sutton is starting, and what you're getting from somebody else may be a third wide receiver or something to that effect.
Yeah, he's definitely, you know, don't, I'm the same way. Don't look to cut him, but if you need some roster space for somebody else, I mean, if you have to, go for it. But he's the type of guy to have on your bench at this time of year where it's all about, like, hey, upside guys. Like, you don't want to have guys like Michael Crabtree or Willie Snead on your bench, you know, just like depth PPR guys. Like, those aren't the guys you have on your roster this time of year.
Yeah, in fact, even if I had my choice between, say, Snead and Courtland Sutton, I'd probably pick Snead. But it's even less now with Lamar Jackson involved. But The Denver Broncos are just such a running team. They love to run the ball. They're running the ball at such a high rate that they're really the only receiver that has any value is Emmanuel Sanders. And we saw that with Demaryius Thomas not really being involved in the offense and why they cut him and those kind of reasons, or traded him, I should say, just because they're focused on the run.
I mean, there was some value in that. I mean, Case Keenum's not a slouch passing the ball. He usually throws the ball at least 30 times, I would say. I think there's some pass game there. I mean, if Emmanuel Sanders is eating up like one third of the target share, then maybe there's not enough to reliably, have a wide receiver, but yeah, Manny Sanders has just been a force there this year. Yeah, Case Keenum's thrown the ball, get this, the 10th most times in the NFL.
He has the 10th most attempts in the NFL?
Yeah. I knew they threw it a little bit. But here, this gives you an idea of the quality of the pass attempts, though. He has one fewer pass attempt than Patrick Mahomes. So I think he's throwing the ball, but it's just not very effective. I think it's he's throwing the ball, but he's throwing it 4 or 5 yards, you know, curl routes. So there's not much the guys are doing with them. They're pretty much just sitting down in zone. So your point stands in that it's not a very potent passing game. It was just the number of attempts that I was taking umbrage with. but your point stands.
Well, yeah, I mean, because the way I've been looking at it is the Broncos with both Lindsay and Freeman getting a lot of carries and that Keenum not really producing well. I didn't even really look at his attempts, but you're correct. A lot of above 30. He's had two games where he had back-to-back games against the Jets and the Rams where he threw for 92 total passes, which, you know, was quite a bit. So, yeah, I mean, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, but hold on. I'm looking at a different stat. This doesn't make any sense. So he's listed as the 10th most, but the Broncos are the 15th most pass attempts per game in the NFL. And let's see, you've got Cleveland who split half the year, Jacksonville since, okay, it's injuries because the three teams above him are Cleveland or people getting benched because the teams above him are Cleveland. So Tyrod and Baker, Jacksonville, which Bort and Cody Kessler, Cincinnati, which is now Jeff Driscoll. And Baltimore is the 6th most, so that's Lamar Jackson. So I think he was number 10 just by attrition. So they're a middle of the road team. So I was wrong, you were right, and I'll shut up now.
Well, I think we're both right, actually, because the way it's spread out, I mean, the guy is getting, you know, quite a bit of time. So I don't know, we're both right. I'll just call it that.
Good call. I like that. And I won't shut up because the next game is the Rams in Detroit. That's my game. Rams travel to Detroit. They are 10-point favorites, 55.5-point over under. Everybody's dead in Detroit. Marvin Jones is on IR. Kerryon Johnson's not playing anymore. Golden Tate was shipped off to Philadelphia. Matt Stafford needs weapons. He has no weapons. He's throwing the ball to LeGarrette Blount and Theo Riddick and Kenny Golladay is good. And he's throwing it to Bruce Ellington, who's on his third team in the NFL. Former 49er legend. Pretty decent PPR player, I'd say, just because Matt Stafford likes to throw the ball. He's got nowhere else to go except for Kenny G and Bruce Ellington. So in a PPR league, sure, he's a cheap play that you might be able to play, but that's not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is we haven't learned anything about what the Rams are going to look like without Cooper Kupp, because that Rams Chiefs game, there's nothing you could have learned from that game. That game was absolutely bonkers. Like, that might be the most bonkers game in the history of the NFL. Just there was nothing to learn. So like Josh Reynolds scored, the tight end scored, like, but we didn't learn a whole lot about what the usage chart would look like, you know, in a normal game, not a game where both teams, you know, where a team can drop a 50 burger and lose. So what I want to see is what is the offense look like in a post Cooper Kupp world? Cause they have the most three wide sets in the NFL, but a three wide set still gives you a tight end on the field. And are they going to start integrating the tight ends? Because Cooper Kupp was kind of their red zone weapon other than Todd Gurley. And now that he's gone, is it going to be Josh Reynolds? Is it going to be Tyler Higbee? Is it going to be Gerald Everett? Like, who's going to be that red zone threat? Because if there's a red zone threat for the Rams, you want that guy on your roster, no matter what. Like, that's who you want on your team. So that's what I'm looking for there in Rams and Detroit.
Now, I have a question for the future. Kenny Golladay, redraft, startup league, either way. Is Kenny Golladay a top 12 receiver?
Top 12. So in 2019 in a redraft league, is he a top 12 wide receiver?
Yeah.
Let me think here. Well, let me go off the let me look at a player's list here just so I can make sure I don't forget anybody. So he is, just because of how it depends on what they do on offense. But let's see the no doubters that are ahead of him. So you've got, Tyreek Hill, Antonio Brown, which come 2020, that's not going to be such an easy call. Tyreek Hill, Antonio Brown, Julio, I think Odell, Mike Evans, Devontae Adams. Did I say Michael Thomas?
No.
Michael Thomas. Thielen. Nuke. Odell.
You said Odell.
The other Odell. he might be. Because you're getting into like Stephon Diggs, Robert Woods, Juju, Keenan Allen, Doug Baldwin's probably going to bounce back. AJ Green, Amari Cooper. Oh, Corey Davis. Oh, boy. Slam dunk, no. Does he have a case? Yes. I would say slam dunk top 16. I wouldn't question that. What? Where would you think?
I have him in there. I would say he's no later than 16, but definitely I'm probably looking at him as a top 12.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Cause I'm looking, Amari Cooper in Dallas is coming on. I think Amari Cooper in Dallas and Kenny Golladay in Detroit might be kind of parallel, ideas in terms of what you might expect. Cause they've got, it all depends on who Matt Stafford has at, offensive coordinator next year, because it's not going to be Jim Bob Cooter, because JBC worked for him for a couple of years there. He kind of turned Matt Stafford into a more reserved and efficient quarterback, but now he stinks. So I would put him in that like Corey Davis, Amari Cooper, kind of Keenan Allen, maybe Manny Sanders sort of range, that like 13, 14, 15, 16, somewhere in there. I wouldn't think twice about it next year.
Yeah, and I think that's probably where he'll fall. Is in between there. I don't think he'll go at anywhere 12 on average, but once he hits the 13 mark, I think you're going to see him come off the board.
Yeah, I think the best way to put him, I think, would be he'd be one of those guys where if I started running back, and he was my best wide receiver, I would be very happy. I think he's one of those guys where I wouldn't want him to be my number one wide receiver, but if I got two stud running backs, I would be okay with it as the third player I drafted. But I doubt that. I don't know. The first round's shaping up to be mostly running backs again. One of those guys is going to be Kareem Hunt. He might never play again. So if he's there in the third round, I'll scoop him up. Definitely. Definitely going to be one of those guys. So. Hope that helps. So we've gone through, six games if you include the Thursday night football game. Let's take a quick break because we've sleepers. So let's break this up here and go to sleepers. I'll give you a sec to switch your notes around, because I realized about halfway through the Buffalo Miami game we forgot to do that. So we normally do this before that we go over the games, but like I said before, we each choose a player at each position, a guy that we think is a sleeper. They have to be owned in less than 50% of leagues to qualify. I use Yahoo. Mike uses CBS. My cat uses ESPN, and my dog uses Flea Flicker. So Mike, who is your quarterback sleeper this week, owned in 50% or fewer of leagues?
I'm going with Marcus Mariota.
Marcus. And wow, he's owned in that few leagues, huh?
Yeah, exactly 50%. I got lucky.
Technicality, because I do say 50% or fewer.
Yeah.
All right, so what knowledge do you want to drop on us about Marcus Mariota today?
So here comes some knowledge bombs. He's been pretty much on a heater in his last three out of the four games, scoring 26 plus fantasy points in those three contests. The only time he missed that mark was when he had a leave against the Indianapolis Colts because he suffered a neck stinger. If I remember right, I don't know if he was on his way anyways to hitting that. It looked like the Colts were pretty much controlling that whole situation. So just to be honest with you, I don't know if he would have got that anyways, even if he didn't get hurt. And they're playing the Jets at home this week. A nice compliment. They give up 20 points to quarterbacks at home. So that's where they're playing. And I think Mariota has a great chance, especially against that Jets defense, against the pass. And what I always look for too is not only what they might be doing next week or this week, but what's coming up down the road. And especially if you're looking to being in the playoffs, this might be even more important than who they're playing this week. And he has a very nice schedule. He has the Jags, Giants, and Redskins coming his way. So I like what he's doing. I like the fact that he has a good matchup this week against the Jets. And even better, I like the fact that they're playing some weak defenses against the pass.
Wow. You know, week three or four, if you put the Jags on that list, I would have called you crazy. But
yeah, no doubt, right?
That team has gone the way of Blake Bortles, fallen apart. My guy this week owned in just 45% of Yahoo leagues. It is, we already talked about him a little bit, Lamar Jackson. Not great at being a running quarterback. He's kind of had like two of his worst case scenarios from a quarterbacking perspective in the last two games. Like, he only has 320 yards passing combined, and he has one touchdown in the two games. He also has four turnovers.
Jesus.
But see, that's like the worst case scenario for him. Like, he completely falls apart as a passer. But he was the number 14 quarterback in his first start in the NFL, and he was number 11 last week. So in his two worst case scenario games, he was still, you know, you'll swallow the pill if he's QB 14. And if you're streaming him as a streamer quarterback, then if you get QB 11 out of him, you're pretty happy in a 12 team league. You know, you got a starting quarterback for free. He goes to Atlanta this week. I think he will go crazy on that fast track there in Atlanta. And they allow the second most fantasy points in the league to quarterbacks. Three quarters of the quarterbacks who've played them this year have at least 20 points in 4 point per passing touchdown leagues, and two of the last three. So I'm all in on Lamar Jackson this week, and I'm very glad I stashed him in multiple leagues about 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, that was pretty smart to get him so early. Plus, you know, I don't know. What do you think? Are they gonna come back with Flacco if he's healthy, or do you think Flacco is done as a Raven?
If they keep winning, he's done as a Raven.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's that. And or we could go, all right, if you think the 45% owned is too much, go take a look at the quarterbacks owned in less than 10% of Yahoo leagues. They're bad.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I my 10% or less this week was Colt McCoy, just if you're absolutely desperate, because he had 18.5 fantasy points last week, so not too bad. You could definitely do worse. Like, you know, you could fall off a cliff. You could be Kareem Hunt. You could definitely do worse than Colt McCoy this week. So who is your running back sleeper?
I might get a little flack for this, but that's okay. I'm going with Justin Jackson, and he's owned in 42% of leagues. And I actually thought that was kind of high, but there it is. So Melvin Gordon, as most of you know, especially if you own Melvin Gordon, he's going to be out for who knows, time being, 1-3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it may be. So obviously the Chargers are going to need a running back. A lot of people, of course, look at Austin Eckler as that running back because he's probably second on the depth chart and gets more of the looks than Justin Jackson does. So why would I look at Justin Jackson? And for two reasons. One, I think that Jackson is going to be less money for your fab budget. And secondly, teams don't necessarily change their offensive philosophy when someone goes out, someone like Melvin Gordon. They're not going to put in a scat back and have him carry the load when they've been relying on a bigger back who is there for pretty much every other down. Now, if I'm looking at who is a good replacement for Melvin Gordon to get those early carries, I'm going to lean towards Justin Jackson. He's a bigger back, and Eckler is more of a gadget back. So I see Eckler's role not changing most of not at all. I do see it getting expanding, but not to the deal where it's going to be – you're going to see a huge difference. So with that said, they got to have someone to fill that spot, and that's Justin Jackson. I also like Jackson because not only is he Gordon type, but I could see him being used in that role. And he has a good schedule as well. In weeks 14 and 15, he has Cincinnati, Kansas City. And if even if Gordon's back by then, chances are that he's going to be eased into it, especially if San Diego is pretty much where they are now. They're already locked into a playoff seed, that kind of thing. You can see them resting Melvin Gordon. So Justin Jackson will still continue to get playing time. I like what he did against the Cardinals last week. He had 7 carries for 57 yards. He didn't score, but that's a huge yards per carry average. And at this time where running backs are sort of getting slim to none, I like his situation.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, Eckler is the obvious beneficiary there. But, yeah, Justin Jackson will have a shot at more touches as well. And like you outlined, he's been pretty efficient with what he's gotten so far. So my running back for this week is LeGarrette Blount. He's not good. There's no minimum threshold for talent, I guess. But what he did against the Bears kind of gave me some pause for the fact that we've kind of written him off. He managed 88 yards and 2 touchdowns against them, and they're one of the best fantasy run defenses in the NFL this season. So that kind of Thanksgiving Day miracle, I stand up and take notice. I'm wondering if he's doing on a season-long basis what he usually does during the game, which is he'll bang his head into the pile 10 times, but then the 11th time, because everybody's so dang tired of tackling LeGarrette Blount because he's a freaking beast of a man, he bounces off somebody and goes for 25, 30 yards and does it again on the 14th carry, and he does it again on the 17th carry, and all of a sudden he goes from 10 carries, 25 yards to 15 carries, you know, 125 yards and 2 touchdowns. You know, he kind of does that. So I'm wondering if he's doing that on a season long thing, cause he's got a little bit fresher legs, cause Kerryon Johnson's been working in. And so I'm wondering if he gets that this week. He's taking on the Rams, who are kind of middling against the running back, but they have over the last 4 weeks, they've yielded at least 70 yards to four different running backs over the last 3 weeks. And they've given up five rushing touchdowns in the same span. So there's, you know, mid-level RB2 potential there from LeGarrette Blount. You know, you're running back 17 on the week. He does have some limited upside because Theo Riddick is going to steal passing downs, for which I think there'll be quite a few. But I think that Blount will get his chance to establish the proverbial run, as it were.
Yeah, and I think they're going to go to him quite a bit. And as you said, the Rams, you know, even though they're so weird, how do they have, like, all these great players on their defense and are middle of the road when it comes to stopping almost anybody? It's so weird. But, I like Blount. I think he's definitely has a chance to get in the end zone, and that's where he makes his money.
All right. Sounds good. So, we've gone through quarterback, running back. Who's your wide receiver sleeper for this week?
Yeah, I don't really like this guy. But he's sort of becoming a bright star. And it's interesting too, because the star that was bright earlier in the season, his name was Jarvis Landry, but his is dimming, and Antonio Callaway's is starting to light up. As Mayfield is getting more and more comfortable, he's looking towards Callaway more and more often. And last week, Callaway had four catches for 62 yards and a touchdown on five targets. That's the one thing that bothers me a little bit about Callaway at this point, is the fact that he's not getting a lot of targets. There are five, six in that range. And that, I think, reflects why he's only owned in 18% of leagues at this point. But he's had two touchdowns in his last four games while catching 14 balls on 18 targets for 188 yards, which is pretty good, because if you break that down, that's 13 yards per catch. So anytime he's getting the ball, he's getting it on some good distances. And four or five catches a game, you probably can deal with if he's getting those long yard plays and getting in the end zone, which is even more important. He does have some solid matchups. And when I mean solid matchups, I mean weak matchups in teams versus Carolina, Denver, Cincinnati. And then he has Cincinnati this week. So twice he gets Cincinnati for the rest of the season. So you can definitely cash in on those defenses.
Yeah, Callaway, that's a guy that I liked. I think I called him a first round talent with a undrafted brain.
Yeah, right.
That guy, when he's on the field, is amazing. And I think the switch over to Kitchens at OC has definitely done him some benefit. But the question with him is always, when will he have an off field thing that breaks him? He's the new Josh Gordon. That's why they traded Josh Gordon. They can only have one of him on the team at once. If they ever touched, the universe would implode, because you're not allowed to touch your duplicate. So I like that one. That's a good one. My guy, I talked about Baker Mayfield until he reached over the 50% threshold. I'm going to do the same dang thing for Christian Kirk. Christian Kirk's ownership percentage makes absolutely no sense. He's only 38% owned in Yahoo. Three games ago, I think he sort of showed the worst of times for him. He had 8 yards 3 games ago. So that a lot of people probably jumped off the Christian Kirk bandwagon then, just like a lot of people jumped off the Eric Ebron bandwagon when he had no targets. And we all saw how that turned out for you last week. But for Christian Kirk, the game 2 games ago is kind of like what I see in a nutshell for what Christian Kirk can do. 77 yards and a score with you know, a long play thrown in there. That's what Christian Kirk sort of is going to be. 75 yards and a touchdown. He's not one of these high volume sort of guys, but he is the heir apparent to Larry Fitzgerald. And I think that Josh Rosen and the Cardinals are working to work that connection. a bit more as much as they can. This week, the Cardinals play the Packers. The Packers, despite spending a lot of high draft capital on defensive backs, have allowed the fourth most fantasy points to opposing wide receivers this year. I believe they're getting Breland back this week, but I don't think that'll do much for Kirk. They have allowed 8 double-digit fantasy days since week 8 to wide receivers, and they've given up 5 wide receiver touchdowns in the last 3 games. So this is a 60, 70 yards in a touchdown play, I think, from Christian Kirk. I think that's what he might get this week. And he's out there in over 60% of Yahoo leagues, and he really shouldn't be. He is a plug-and-play wide receiver 3, and I know they have wide receiver 3s on Yahoo. So that's my sleeper this week is Christian Kirk.
I like that, especially as the season is coming to an end, because if I remember right, Fitzgerald has announced pretty much his retirement. This is basically his last year. So if that's true, then I can see as the season starting from now till the end, they're going to want to get Kirk more and more involved so that they can put him in a better place come next year. And I could see definitely his volume increasing every week. Really?
Yeah, that's kind of what I see too, is fades into the background and Christian Kirk kind of fades into the foreground.
Yep.
So yeah, who is Mike, who is your tight end this week?
So I'm going with the Zoom Zoom man, CJ.
I knew it was going to be CJ Zuma. I just like, I didn't even bother like even thinking that I could use CJ Azuma.
I was hoping, I was crossing my fingers. I was like, please don't take my guy. And yeah, he's only owned in 27% of leagues, and kind of rightfully so. He hasn't really emerged as a standout tight end since he's had this glorious of a chance, because there's no other tight end the Bengals have to use, and Dalton loves his tight end. So I figured that he was going to be used quite a bit, but that didn't really turn out to fruition. But now Jeff Driskel's involved. And as I was talking about earlier, he tons of targets. He got 13 targets last week. I don't know where he was running or how far deep these targets were. I didn't see the game, but for a tight end to get 13 targets and only catch 6 passes has me a little worried, because usually they, you know, the incompletions come from players running deep routes. So they'll get 7 targets, but, you know, 4 catches, because 3 of those targets were like 30 yards from the line of scrimmage. But there's no way Azuma is running 30 yards downfield. So I don't know. I have to look at the game, but it just was like, what? It didn't make any sense to me. He did get 39 yards off of those 6 targets. So that's only like six plus yards per reception. So right there, it tells you that he's not going deep at all. He hasn't really gone deep. He has like one of the lowest yards per catch ratios for tight ends in the league, but you can't really beat someone who's out there for free catching 6 passes. And as mentioning, Driskel is definitely going to rely on him. So as far as matchup goes, he has Oakland and Cleveland in week 14 and 15, and the Steelers, which, you know, people's ears probably perked up and like, Steelers are a good defense. Well, not so much against the pass, and definitely not against tight ends. They really get exposed by that position. So he has a soft schedule coming up.
All right, that's a good one. That's a good, given the target volume that he's gotten with his quarterback that he'll have for the rest of the year. Well, the idea is that he'll have him for the rest of the year at least. So my guy is Matt Lacoste. Matt Lacoste, he is a tight end for the Denver Broncos. We kind of already about how Cincinnati is a dumpster fire, but they do allow the second most fantasy points to tight ends. Jake Butt died. and last week Jeff Heirman died, and now it's down to Matt Lacoste. The tight ends do get targeted a decent amount by the Case Keenum. There for brain broke there for a second. By Case Keenum, they do get a good amount of targets, and the bang against this week does allow the second most fantasy points to tight ends. Like I said, they got torched last week by David Njoku, which, you know, no harm in that, but pretty much any tight end that you've ever heard of that's played them this year has torched them. Eric Ebron torched them. Jack Doyle played well against them. Vance McDonald destroyed them. Travis Kelce, OJ Howard, okay, they get a pass for that. But David Njoku, like any guy that you've heard of, has done well against them. And they gave up two touchdowns to tight ends last week. And Matt Lacoste in a partial game in filling in for when Heirman went out, he only had four targets, but it was in like a half, but he did turn that into 34 yards and a touchdown. He's available in 86% of Yahoo leagues. So he's a nice, a deep league play for you. An option for you to, fill in a guy that will, hopefully be able to, dull the pain of losing maybe Jack Doyle or something like that. So that was a good break from the games. Your guys were Marcus Mariota, Justin Jackson, Antonio Callaway, and CJ Uzoma. My guys were Lamar Jackson, no relation to Justin, LeGarry Glenn Blunt, Christian Kirk, and Matt LaCroix, like the bubbly water. So we're going to go back to the games now. We left off at LA and Detroit, and we're going to go back to a game that last season, not a lot of fun for you to watch. Probably a little bit more fun for you to watch, Mike. Indianapolis at Jacksonville. The Colts are 4-point favorites, and it's a 47-point over-under. So what are you looking for in this one?
Yeah, this year is a lot better than it was last year. The Jags in the first game just blew open the doors. I think they beat them like 42-10 or something to that effect. It was ugly that first game. But tides have changed. And the basic thing that I'm going to be looking for is if that Jags defense from last year can come to life and stop the runaway train of Andrew Luck. Luck has scored over 20 fantasy points in 8 consecutive, obviously helped by the fact that he has thrown 3 touchdowns in each of those games. So 8 straight games with 3 touchdowns, just being awesome as awesome can be. Jags ranked 20th in yards allowed per completion. For the Jags, the game script will change once again after being 3rd in the league with rushing attempt percentage with Fournette in the lineup. Now Fournette is out of the lineup because he decided he was going to take some fisticuffs to the opposing players and is now suspended for just 1 week. Fighting on the field gets you 1 week suspension in the NFL. Yeah. So Jags are struggling to score anyhow. TD on just 15% of their drives at home, 31st in the NFL, and just 1.6 red zone opportunities, which is last in the league. So not only are they not scoring points, they're not going to have Fournette. It's just an ugly situation for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Starting, definitely, you're going to put Luck in, Ebron in, and Hilton, especially Ebron, because Jack Doyle is out for the year due to a laceration. Mm-hmm. I think it was a kidney laceration, which is going to hurt. So. And I don't know yet. One thing, if you guys are going to watch the game or look at the box score, see who the second tight end is, because the second tight end for the Colts always has some kind of value. At this time, I don't know who it is. I don't know if it's going to be they just
Mo Alley Cox?
Yeah, Mo Alley Cox or Eric Swoop. That was the guy I was trying to think of. They picked someone up off someone's practice squad a few days ago. It's going to be somebody. And then you definitely want to stream, look to stream Cody Kessler, and then flex Yeldon, Moncrief, Westbrook. If you have any of those guys, especially Yeldon, look to flex him even more so because the Colts are soft in the middle, and I could see Yeldon being utilized pretty much because he's really going to be the only running back out there. Carlos Hyde, he hasn't done really all that much when going over to Jacksonville, so I think Yeldon is probably going to be used. So if you're in a PPR league, he'd be a good flex option for you.
I'm kind of surprised you don't want to start Carlos Hyde. Not. Yeah, he's done nothing. Season high with the Jags, 10 carries last week. So not exactly the guy you're going to be targeting. What do you do with looks like Marlon Mack's going to play this weekend, but the Jags have a pretty good run defense. What are you doing with
if Mack can go, you're definitely going to want to start him. The Jags run defense is so-so, but the Colts offensive line is just going to probably blow the barn doors off of those guys. And Kelly's going to be back, I believe. So he missed last week, and I think he's going to be back this week. So they'll have the center. I just think Mack is the guy. If he's not going, then I would sort of sidestep Nyheim Hines and I can't think of the other guy right now.
Wilkins.
Yeah.
Okay. Asking for a friend, Marlon Mack or Josh Adams?
Yeah, I would definitely go Marlon Mack here.
What?
Especially if you're in a PPR league. If it's a PPR league, I'd definitely go Marlon Mack.
Oh, okay. All right, fair enough. I'll take your word at it. Next one up, Cleveland at Houston. This is where kind of where I think the Cleveland nice story ends, at least for a week. But it's a 47-point over-under with the Texans as 5.5-point favorites. So what are you looking for in this one?
I'm really excited about this. I think the duo of Baker Mayfield and Nick Chubb has me just really excited about this whole team. And Mayfield in particular is the first quarterback to throw multiple touchdowns in five consecutive games. Can you name the year that last happened with? So Mayfield, five consecutive games, has thrown for multiple touchdowns. Who was the last quarterback in what year to do so for the Cleveland Browns?
Oh, for the Browns. I was like lots of quarterbacks every year. I was very confused. For the Browns? Is it old Browns or new Browns?
It's old Browns.
Old Browns?
Old Browns.
Those are? I mean, I don't know.
Okay, it was before I was born.
Oh my gosh.
1967. Was the last time that happened.
Oh man. So who was it?
Frank Ryan.
Frank Ryan, Matt's father.
Yeah. Must be.
Brother to Robin Rex.
Yeah, exactly. Father's brother's former roommate.
There you go. So wow, that long ago, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Huh. I'll be. I mean, he's a good quarterback, and now that they don't have Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley mucking up the works, I think he'll be unleashed to his full potential.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. And then the Texans defense is not as soft on defense as Mayfield has faced in four of the last five games, but they're not a stout one at that, giving up 17 points per game to quarterbacks, which is 22nd in the NFL. Chubb's getting a lot of volume. Talking about old school, he's getting like the old school kind of carries, getting in his last five starts 23 plus carries, and so pretty good. And then Deshaun Watson is playing the same era as Nick Chubb. So
I'm sorry. He's what getting, was that you cut out? What was that?
Yeah, he's Nick. As far as Deshaun Watson goes, he's getting 25 passing attempts. So sort of like the same era where they didn't pass the ball and they just ran. That's kind of what I meant on that one.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. Okay, I thought I missed something there. Yeah. So okay. Yeah. So Watson, what do you think of Watson for rest of the season, we'll say?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why he's getting such less carries. I mean, God, carries, passing options, but it's just if he's not getting that volume, then it's kind of hard to say, is he a starting quarterback or is he kind of in that streaming situation? But I think if you're looking at, I don't know, if you're looking at between Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, you're definitely going to go with Mahomes. But if you're looking at Mahomes and, I mean, if you're looking at Watson and say like Ryan or something to that effect, then you might want to lean more towards Watson.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I don't think there's a player that you'd start over Pat Mahomes at this point.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to set sort of a bar, but I think I went too far with that.
I think you pushed it too far. You're like on a scale from me to at basketball. I don't think he's a Michael Jordan, but so. Alrighty, so that was good. Next one up goes to Green Bay, where Green Bay are 14-point favorites, 43.5-point over-under. So that tells you how much fun it's going to be a Cardinals fan this weekend, because they absolutely smashed, and it's not even going to be a fun one. My question this week has to do with the Packers wide receiver core. They answered the question that I had a few weeks ago about the running back core. They finally went with Aaron Jones and has paid wonderful, beautiful dividends. But now Randall Cobb's back. It was Marquez Valdes-Scantling for a few weeks, St. Brown for a couple weeks. So I guess my question for this one, and I'll put this to you too. So we've always wanted the second wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers. A lot of that had to do with how great Aaron Rodgers was and how well that offense hummed and clicked and did everything. But I mean, Aaron Rodgers is not an Aaron Rodgers level player this year. He is, I mean, he's quarterback 13 on the season. So he's in that streaming conversation, to be honest, from week to week. And it's kind of bringing the rest of the offense down. Now, people want to credit this to a lot of stuff, but I mean, he hurt his knee, and it wouldn't really be out of question for Aaron Rodgers to say that he's fine, tell everybody he's fine, but he's battling a knee injury all year that he won't tell anybody about. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, if say MVS or ESB or wide receiver two battle, should we care? I'm kind of at the point where I don't know if this Packers offense is something that we should try to invest in until Mike McCarthy's gone. So that's kind of my other than what we already talked about with Christian Kirk on the other side, because Aaron Jones, you're starting him. David Johnson, you're starting him. And Larry Fitzgerald, you can start him if you want, but he's you kind of already know what you have with him this season. But the thing that's up in the air is this wide receiver two situation for the Packers. And my question is this, do you even want any of these guys, even if one of them wins? Because Aaron Rodgers is not the Aaron Rodgers that he's been. This is not the offense that we're used to in Green Bay.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting too, is that you're mentioning Aaron Rodgers. Is Tom Brady sort of in the same boat where now, I don't know if Brady's dealing with an injury or not, but neither one of them are like playing to the standard that we're used to seeing.
Yeah, exactly. They're kind of goat-like they have been throughout their careers. So next one up, it's another Battle of the Bay, kind of. This is Carolina. Carolina Panthers travel to Tampa Bay for an NFC South matchup. 54.5 point over under with the Panthers as 3-point favorites in this one. I mean, this one, so DeSean Jackson hurt his hand. You've got Jameis Winston back under center. He's going to throw the ball a ton, and he's going to throw the ball to Mike Evans a ton, but there's still a lot of other passes to go around, and they can't all go to Cameron Brate. None of them go to Peyton Barber, really. So who do you want? It's another wide receiver question down the stretch, and it's for PPR, but for a while it was Chris Godwin. For about 4 or 5 weeks, Humphreys was a top 15 wide receiver, which is kind of crazy. He scored a lot of touchdowns in that time span, but it's kind of crazy over a 4 or 5 week span. He was, you know, a set and forget wide receiver for you, and he hardly cracked any rosters. But which one of those guys is going to pop up down the stretch? And I kind of feel like going against Carolina, this would be sort of the game where you might get a good idea as to who's going to pop up, because it's going to be one of those, you know, like a out of game, because the Panthers, they're not, they're kind of a middling defense, I guess is the best way to put it. They're number 13. So they're not terrible, but they're not great. But last week, like Lockett and Moore both lit them up, which is kind of crazy. They both went for over 100 yards and a touchdown. They're giving up a lot of wide receiver touchdowns, but kind of holding off on yardage so much. They're not giving up a ton of huge games. Earlier in the year, it was Humphreys, just frame of reference, 82 yards and 2 scores. So I kind of want to see in this one is if it's Adam Humphreys or Chris Godwin, who would you want to scoop up in PPR for the rest of the year in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, I mean, for Dynasty, I think you definitely want Godwin, but for this year purposes, I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping we get some clarity on this weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
All righty. All right, so next one up, this one is going to be, I heard that they're not going to show this because they're not allowed to show vision. But Kansas City travels to Oakland, 55.5 point over under, with the Chiefs set to smash the Raiders by 14.5 points. Given the news today, I can kind of guess what you're going to want to see, but I will ask you anyways. Mike, what are you looking for in this one?
So on top of the news today, it's going to emphasize even more what I wrote, and that was how many different players will Patrick Mahomes throw touchdowns to? And
that's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah, thank you. Oakland is allowing 34 points at home, the most in the league, obviously. The Chiefs led the league in passing differential per play than their opponent by 2 yards. So basically, the Chiefs get 2+ yards more per pass than any other opponent they face. Pat Mahomes, and that's the large reason why they're getting so many yards than their opponent, is the highest rated passer with 142.4 passer rating when in the pocket. Now, when he's in the pocket and it's clean, that's when he gets his 142.4. However, when he's under pressure, he drops from the highest rated passer to the 25th. And so when that pressure starts to come around, he's dropped from 142.4 to 62. So you would figure that the Raiders would probably want to get some rush going, and that's how you stop Mahomes. Well, Oakland is last in the league in getting pressure on the quarterback. So you can imagine what Patrick Mahomes is going to do, especially if the pocket is clean. Raiders have only 10 sacks on the season, last in the NFL. 10 sacks all year. So,
well, it's hard to find a pass rusher, especially.
Yeah, you know, it's not like they have, you know, Khalil Mack or anything. You know, if they had that guy or something, you know, they probably would have nice. A lot more sacks. But, you know, Mahomes throws a TD on 35% of his throws, which is number one in the NFL. And
yeah, Raiders, I'd say so.
Huh?
I said, yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. Yeah, by quite a bit. And the Raiders allow a TD pass on 23% of the opposing team's possessions, which is 31st. So second to last in the NFL. It's going to get ugly really quick. I went back and forth on how many different receivers Patrick Mahomes is going to throw to, or the over under of when Patrick Mahomes is going to be pulled from the game. So like third quarter, you know, midway through, is he going to get pulled under then, that kind of thing. So, but I decided to go with the different opportunities for him. And this game should definitely be over by midway through the third quarter. Obviously you're going to start Mahomes, Hunt, Hill, Kelsey. And you mentioned Watkins was out. I didn't know that. But.
He got downgraded to, well, I think he got downgraded to out earlier today.
If he did, yeah, it didn't. And you don't want to flex him, obviously. And
bad call to flex the guy who's not playing.
Yeah, that'd be a really bad situation for you. But you do want to flex Cook and Doug Martin.
Doug Martin, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost put him as my sleeper this week because the Chiefs defense against running backs is pretty bad. Pretty bad. But my whole thing was, you know, if they're going to be down big, are they going to turn to Jalen Richard? Because Dougie Fresh doesn't really catch passes. That was my only trepidation. That was my only hesitation.
And I think that's why I like Doug Martin in this, is because obviously they're going to try to run the ball to slow down that offense of Kansas City. But also that's going to involve Martin. And then when they're behind, they're going to use, you know, him in the backfield to catch some passes. But you're right about Jalen Richard and the fact that he's the better pass catcher than Doug Martin. So we'll see what happens there.
Cool. All righty. That one's going to be a disaster. And now turning to a disaster of a different type, the Jets travel to Tennessee, where the Jets are 8-point underdogs, and this one's going to have a 40.5-point over-under. So if you love, you know, was this would be 18-22? No, it'd be 16-24 finals, just absolute slugfest with no fun in them whatsoever. Jets at Tennessee is your game. But sounds like from what you told me earlier, you might have a different opinion about what Tennessee might be doing with your sleeper quarterback this week.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think you're too far off. This is pretty much the Dolphins and Bills kind of game here. And it's just going to be boring as hell, especially if you like watching games that score a lot of points, because neither of these two teams are going to do that.
It's the battle for the number 12 pick.
Yeah, it's horrible. So not only are both teams bad offensively, both teams are actually kind of hard to score against as well. So good luck.
Have fun.
Yeah. Titans, if go with your field goal kicker. If you have a field goal kicker either on the Jets or Titans, that's probably the guy that you want to play in this situation. The Titans allow just 3 red zone opportunities per game, and also in allowing teams to convert in those in TDs. So they're 4th in allowing just 3 red zone appearances per game and 5th in allowing those teams to get into the end zone. So they're the top echelon of teams, not only getting the red zone, but scoring touchdowns as well. At home, the Jets allow opponents to score a TD on just 15% of their drives. That is the lowest in the league. And they're definitely one of the toughest teams to score a touchdown on. So not only are teams not scoring, and I know, I mean, at least I do, scoring always equals a touchdown, but
yeah.
it's just scoring at all. And so not only that, but they're also, when it comes down to touchdowns, forget about it. So Mariota, as we were talking about, is my guy. He's been a quarterback 7 or better in the last 3 games. And with that, Corey Davis has also flourished and has finished as a wide receiver in 2 of those 3 games. So whenever Mariota is pretty much on, so is Corey Davis.
That's been a good connection over the last month or so, 3-4
games. Yeah, we're actually seeing Corey Davis becoming what we thought he was going to be, which is really good. So I would definitely start Mariota and Davis. And flex, Deion Lewis and PPR, Derrick Henry and standard. Interesting fact, on the last 3 weeks, Lewis has rushed 37 times for only 89 yards, while Henry has rushed 28 times for 134 yards. So Henry's yards per carry is 4.8. So he's blowing it up right now. But Lewis is only 2.4. Yet Lewis is getting the extra carries. And with that said, the Jets have been gashed on the run by the run. So giving up 182 yards and then 200 yards to both the Pats and the Bills. So it's been a disaster for the Jets on the road. I mean, on the ground, trying to stop that. So definitely look to flex Lewis or Henry, depending on your scoring format.
All right. Isaiah Crowell, the worst player in the NFL?
Oh, for sure. Especially if we're looking at starters. Crow has just been horrible. He's had his stats probably look better to those if you're not looking at the entire season by game by game basis, because he had a blowout game, I think, in week 4, where he rushed for over like 200 yards and like 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And so those stats just inflated him, but it's been an awful, awful year. Just look at his individual game stats and you can see that he's just not doing anything.
Yeah. I crunched the numbers this week for Isaiah Crowell. So if you take out, he had a big game week 1 and then that big game week 4 you referenced. Between those 2 games, he had 333 yards in those 2 games. Outside of those 2 contests, 43 yards a game. So just a real stinker pooper, man. So not somebody you want to have on your roster. And he's owned in 75% of Yahoo leagues.
God.
That's absurd. Like, that's people who drafted Isaiah Crowell and now are 2-10 and rage quit the league. So they haven't had a chance to cut him yet. So Isaiah Crowell is bad. If you have him on your roster, you should feel bad. Speaking of rosters that you should feel bad about, San Francisco travels to Seattle. Not exactly the game that 49ers fans had hoped for when Jimmy G was their handsome quarterback. The Seahawks are 10-point favorites, 46-point over under. This is what you do. You want a retirement strategy, Mike? You ready?
Yeah.
Sell everything you own. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Your car, if you got one, everything. Take every penny you have, okay? Find somebody that will take a bet. Seahawks with the points. Put everything there.
Uh-huh.
You will make so much money. Because this 49ers team is getting capital S, capital M, capital A, capital S, capital H, smashed. They're getting destroyed. It is last week by the 3rd quarter, I was watching the 49ers game streaming on my cell phone propped up between my knees, and I was playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey instead. And I had no desire to watch this team because they mustered 9 points. 9 points. We keep talking about how bad the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense is against everybody. They can't stop anything. They can't do anything. Other teams can just score at will against them, except the San Francisco 49ers, who scored 1 touchdown, missed a field goal, and scored 1 touchdown, missed the extra point, scored 1 field goal. 9 points against one of, if not the, overall worst defense in the league. Now they go to Seattle to play the Seahawks. They have not won in Seattle since Jim Harbaugh's first year coaching, which I believe was 2011. And none of the games have been close. The closest game was the NFC Championship game, which was the cursed game where Navarro Bowman's knee exploded and then the entire 49ers franchise exploded around him. This one's going to be a mess. Start no nine. Oh, start Matt Breida. Start George Kittle. Don't get cute and start Dante Pettis. Don't think that you can do anything with that there. Marquise Goodwin's out. Pierre Garçon's out. Kittle and Breida are all you have there. And even then, I'm not super trusting of either of them in this just absolutely horrendous matchup. For the Seahawks, two questions here. Doug Baldwin said that this is the healthiest he felt all season. He said it since OTAs, actually, so even in the preseason. So let's see how he performs this week. And Brian Schottenheimer said today that Rashad Penny is going to get a large role against the 49ers. Now, he did say it verbally. So Rashad Penny has had some weight issues this year. So I'm not sure if he's getting a large role, R-O-L-E, or large role, as in R-O-L-L, like he's going to get a big old baguette to snack on during the game. Still not sure which one that's going to be. So that's my other question for this game. And then my side question, because I would be super happy if it happened, is will God allow me happiness and allow Richard Sherman to pick off Russell Wilson? I would be so happy if that happened.
Has Sherman got any interceptions this year?
No, because they don't throw to him.
Wow.
That's the thing, is he's just shutting down one side of the field. Last week, Winston threw a couple balls to Mike Evans, Mike Evans is too big and strong for Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman's tricks just don't work on him. So he kind of torched Sherman a little bit last week, but they just don't throw to Sherman at all. He shuts down one side of the field, and the opposing quarterback just absolutely chews up and spits out the defense on the rest of the field. That's what you're dealing with there. And Chris Carson, top 10 option this week. Rashad Penny, if they do what they say they're going to do, not a bad DFS guy, should be pretty cheap. This defense looked completely destroyed with the Reuben Foster thing last week. They looked like they didn't care. They might bounce back a little bit, but I think that might have been them giving up on the season. They have nothing to play for. John Lynch should be fired. And that's that. That was my little 49ers rant.
Yeah, he definitely. I mean, I don't know if it's too early to say to fire Lynch, but when you draft, well, he was part of the draft for Reuben Foster, wasn't he? And also just, you know, making Jerick McKinnon one of the highest paid running backs and stuff like that.
He gets the pass on Jerick McKinnon just because of his knee exploding in preseason. And I mean, McKinnon's gotten like, if you include the season, I think he's gotten like four carries as a 49er. Jesus. But what kills me, this is what kills me about Lynch, and we'll move on after this. I said it after his first draft and his first offseason. I said, Lynch has decent evaluation. The Niners picked up Laken Tomlinson for a song, and he's been a pretty solid offensive lineman for him. They got George Kittle in the fifth round, stuff like that. It's not his evaluation, which is actually starting to come into question. It's his valuation. He wants to go get a guy, and he pays whatever it takes to go get him. I mean, Solomon Thomas, the third pick of the first round in his first draft, probably would have been better suited 8-9. He probably could have traded back further. But side note, kind of a bust. Second pick that he ever drafted, Reuben Foster, cut. Third pick, Akella Witherspoon, below average, got benched this year, cornerback. Fourth pick, CJ Beathard. We all saw what CJ Beathard did. Fifth pick, Joe Williams, out of the league without even getting one carry. Sixth pick, George Kittle. He finally did something right. And that's that. Seventh pick, Trent Taylor. But his drafting's bad. He overpays players. He's not going to be able to build a contender. He's extremely lucky that he had Jimmy G fall into his lap. And that's that, because I'm starting to get frustrated. So let's not talk about the 49ers any longer. So the next two games, the two games that you're going to talk about, I'm going to kick back and listen to, because these are the two best games of the week, in my opinion. We'll start off. Minnesota travels to New England. 49.5 point over under. 5.5 point favorites are the Patriots, it looks like. And then the next game, which you can just slide right into, I'm just gonna kick back and listen. Chargers go to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh are 3.5 point favorites with a 51.5 point over under. So what are you looking at in these two great battles of two of probably the top seven or eight teams in the league? Or four of the top seven or eight teams in the league.
So yeah, I got lucky here with these games. Sort of made up for Miami, Buffalo, and yeah. You know, those games. I think for the Vikings and Patriots, is what's going to break first? Is it going to be the stellar offense of the Patriots at home, because they're averaging nearly like 5 touchdowns at home, and then when they go on the road, for some reason they just fall apart and they're averaging like 1.9 touchdowns on the road. So you're looking at like a 4-point four touchdown differential between home and the road. Something sneaky about that, I don't know, but whatever, those are the stats. And then you got the Vikings defense, of course, that is the new purple people eaters. Yes. The Patriots, as I was saying, average four touchdowns games at home, which is fifth in the NFL. And the Vikings allow a touchdown on just 16% of opponents' drives, lowest in the league, and they only allow a TD pass on just 11% of opponents' possessions, which is also the lowest in the NFL. So in those two categories, the Vikings are absolutely the best. Also like to see which wide receiver gets the most accomplished. Will it either be Adam Thielen or Julio Edelman? Thielen has just been money on third downs. He leads the league in targets, receptions, and first downs when the Vikings need him the most. And then with Edelman, he's also been just making the most of his opportunities since returning in week 5 after being suspended for the first 4 weeks due to his little drug habit. And he ranks 10th in targets, 7th in receptions, 15th in yards, while being the wide receiver 13 in fantasy points scored since his return. So he's been a monster. Start, definitely Thielen, Diggs, Cousins, Edelman, Brady, I put in there, but I was very tempted. If they were on the road, I would have put Brady probably the first time in a streaming category. So Brady's not doing well. But it just is like, it's just Tom Brady and they're at home. So you got to go with that. And then flex, White, Michelle, Gronk, Gordon, Cook. And as I was saying, very, very close to streaming Brady. He hasn't been better than a quarterback 16 since week 7. So that's how far Brady has fallen, is in the quarterback 16 and less range since the 7th week of the season.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine having the cojones to sit Tom Brady, or recommend sitting Tom Brady. If you'd like to see somebody who has that cojones, I'd like you to check out footballobserver.com, little article by the name of Jeff Crisco, who says to sit Tom Brady this week. I don't think he's a good play this week. It was his first. So to kind of highlight what you're talking about, last week he threw 2 passing touchdowns. It was his first time doing that since week 7 at Chicago. And he had no passing touchdowns in weeks 8, 9, and 10. Technically week 11 too, but that was his bye. He has fewer top 5 weeks than Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen. And so all the people who said that he was going to be bad this year are finally correct. And I was one of them. So I'm going to take my victory lap.
Well, you should. I actually had him good for two more seasons, but I guess his dietary supplements have run out, and so has his pretty much his career. So we'll. I mean, I hate to say that we're calling the curtains on him now, but when you're looking at 5 weeks of just nasty football play, I don't know. I don't know what you call it, but it's not good.
He stinks.
He does. All right.
All right, next one. Chargers at Pittsburgh. Let's get this thing. Let's rock and roll. We're almost at 2 hours. Let's get this thing rolling. Oh, geez.
We keep pushing the time. That's awesome. Yeah, I know. what will the Chargers game plan look like without Melvin Gordon? And the Chargers and Steelers can move the ball. Both LA is first in offensive play differential comparable to their opponent, while Pittsburgh is second. Steelers score on average two touchdowns at home, 4.2 touchdowns at home, excuse me. Which is second in LA, second to the Patriots at home with their 4.8 or whatever that is. But Los Angeles is allowing just 18.5 points on the road, which is fewest in the NFL. As far as Gordon is accounted for, nearly 30% of the Chargers' offensive yards, which is sixth highest rate for any running back. So they obviously
that's ridiculous. Use
him. Yeah, they use him quite a bit. And you're wondering why, I mean, not you personally, but people are there wondering why he finally broke down. Well, I think everybody, for the most part, that's been paying attention to Melvin Gordon has been asking, when is he going to break down? When is he going to break down? Well, he finally is breaking down.
And can we talk about the play where he got hurt?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
How dumb was that? Did you see it?
No, I didn't.
It was like a double reverse thing where he got hit at an awkward angle because they were up by like double. They were up by a lot. I want to say it was close to 20 points, and they ran this bonkers like double and end around and he gets hit at a really awkward angle and just kind of buckles. And it's like, that's not really trying to protect your banged up star running back. So it was just an extraordinarily moronic play. On their part, a horrible play call. So
not only that, like you said, they were up. I mean, the game was over pretty much at that time. And it just doesn't make any sense. And that's one thing that drives me nuts about coaches, that they just keep bribing the players out there. When you're up by like 20 something points and it's 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter, why are you putting your running back out there? I mean, and your starting quarterback. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me, but whatever. They're the coaches. I'm not. So. So as I was talking about with Jackson, they're probably going to San Diego. LA's going to probably use a two running back situation. They're probably going to go a little bit running back by committee. But I really do still believe that Jackson is going to have the bigger portion of the early downs. You're going to want to start Roethlisberger, Allen, Bryant, Juju, and Connor, and then stream Rivers. But you know, one thing with Rivers is that he's not getting a lot of volume either. But I can see him passing more now that Gordon is on the shelf. So look for that. Look to see if the differential between what Rivers was doing before and what he's going to do in this game, and see if there's a lot more attempts or a good significant amount of attempts that Rivers is doing because Gordon is out. And I could really see them utilizing that, especially with the receivers they have. It's kind of surprising that they don't throw more anyways, but here's a chance for them to do so. And if you have and you own Rivers, this might be a good opportunity to play him.
Yeah. That's a real good call. So I think that puts that one to bed, and the NFL schedule this week gets put to bed with Washington at Philadelphia. This one's a 45.5 point over under with Philadelphia as 6.5 point favorites. Colt McCoy, good old Colt McCoy, starting his second game since 2014. for Washington. So my question is Alex Smith kind of turned it into a captain check down. Colt McCoy kind of aired it out a little bit more last week. Are the weapons for Washington going to wake up with Colts? Because we're going to have a little bit of a different game plan, because he does kind of try to push the ball. Not like Alex Smith, who, you know, a 6-yard completion is, you know, the platonic ideal of an Alex Smith, passing down, is a nice, tidy 6-yard completion. Whereas Colt McCoy is more of an up and down, you know, he'll get sacked for 20-yard loss, but then he'll get it back in two plays. So we'll see if that wakes up Jordan Reed, wakes up Doxson. I mentioned Trey Quinn earlier, potential sleeper guy, lots of catches. We'll see how that goes with Washington. But my real, real big question. Okay. I'm gonna list off some guys for you. All right. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Keith Kirkwood, Tajay Sharp, Rashard Higgins, Ryan Switzer, Seth Roberts, Isaiah McKenzie, Bruce Ellington. These are all players who have as many fantasy points per game or more than Alshon Jeffrey since the Eagles have gotten Golden Tate.
Wow.
Yeah. Alshon Jeffrey in half point PPR is averaging 5.8 fantasy points per game. Same as Austin Carr, but everybody else that I listed is averaging more fantasy points per game since the Eagles got Golden Tate. So my question is, are we done starting Golden Tate for the year? This is a defense that I think can be beaten. I mean, they're middling, but the Philadelphia offense has been kind of sneaky bad. And I think the addition of Golden Tate, who's gotten 8 targets in each of his last 2 games, I think it's starting to funnel and siphon things away from Alshon Jeffrey. And with a smaller pie and more mouths to feed, I think Alshon Jeffrey might just be getting phased out. Now, he's an incredible talent and can make me look incredibly stupid for saying that he might be toast, but he's only getting 5 1/3 targets per contest since Golden Tate has shown up, and he's only averaging 40 yards and hasn't scored. So that's not a recipe for fantasy success.
Well, and I think also Golden Tate's not even really doing much. Carson Wentz is not really doing much either. It's their whole offense is, I think, just gone to the, I don't know, trash.
Yeah, that's why I said they've been sneaky bad. Because everybody's given them sort of a pass for Super Bowl. They have they've got a pretty gnarly Super Bowl hangover this year. So it's one of those things where people don't want to believe it to be true, but it kind of is.
Well, and also I think that they just weren't all that good to start with. I mean, weren't they a wild card team? And I think they just got hot, and they just aren't performing how they were because they weren't actually all that good of a team even coming into this year.
Yeah, so they went on a real heater to make it to the Super Bowl and not be real representative about what they are as an actual group. They could have just hit a big heater, which you see from time to time, and that's why you usually get the quote unquote Super Bowl hangover. It's just because a team hits a heater and they win the Super Bowl. We saw it 5-6 years ago with Joe Flacco. He hit the heater to beat all heaters. Non-Eli Manning in the Super Bowl edition to win it all. And we learned that the team was actually kind of average to below average after that. All right. For this week's episode of the Football Absurdity Podcast, this one went exceptionally long. It's a 2-hour extravaganza. If you're this far in, please take an extra 2-3 minutes. Go to Apple Music, rate, review, give us some feedback. We'd love some feedback. You can follow the website at fballabsurdity.com so you don't miss any of the articles that we're pumping out this week. Season's starting to run low, so we're going to start transitioning into the 2019 things starting in a couple weeks. I'm going to take some what I like to call way too early looks at things because so many things will change. But website's pumping out great weekly content for you, whether you're still in your leagues or you're starting to transition out, we'll say, into the off season. That's code for missing the playoffs. You can follow Mike at RFL Red Zone. You can follow me at JMKRISKO. And the website again, footballabsurdity.com. Thanks everybody for listening. This was a long one. Appreciate you if you listened to the end. And Mike, have a good night.
You too. Yeah. Everybody out there, have a great night.
Take care, everybody. Bye.